So Drive on TSN 1200, AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, our producer Cam Clement. Let's go back to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline for our next guest. He's the founder of Canadian Soccer Daily, host of World Cup coverage here on TSN Radio, author of D-Row My Life. It's Brendan Dunlop. Brendan, how you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, man? Nice to be back on the show with you.
Yeah, great to have you again as well. Well, interesting day yesterday. And, I mean, first a story comes out and seemed like maybe John Herdman's going to New Zealand and, you know, dueling press releases with, you know, Earl Cochran and John Herdman all saying that Herdman is committed to Canada and he's got a contract until the World Cup in 2026. What did you make of everything that you saw and heard over the course of the last 48 hours?
Yeah, it was a kind of a roller coaster 14 hours, which Canadian soccer fans are pretty used to in general, right? I think that, you know, the unique experience that it is being a fan of Canadian soccer and having followed Canada soccer as an organization, whether you are just as a watching fan or having worked in the media like you and I, you know, you as time kind of goes by and there was no response from Canada soccer, your mind kind of wanders, right? It was very easy for both fans and media to kind of let that spiral. So the fact that Canada Soccer came out with that triple-headed statement, you know, a very direct message, very on-brand of John Herdman and very clear and direct that, look, he's had suitors and, you know, as he said there, when you are successful, there are people that come looking and come calling, right? That's a natural part of the whole process. And I don't think anyone at all is surprised at that. I just think everyone was surprised at the certainty in which it seemed that New Zealand report was delivered. And the fact that New Zealand is a program that's not on the same trajectory that Canada is. And if to lose him to, you know, at a time where the World Cup is coming here and Canada's on this upward trajectory that he's so very much been a part of, to, you know, go back to his old lover in the New Zealand Football Federation, I think that left a lot of Canadian fans, you know, kind of uncomfortable. But as we said there, you know, that the triple-headed statement, with Earl Cochran and President Nick Bontis coming out and supporting the fact that John Herdman was here to stay and there was no need or expression on his end to want to part ways now, that was definitely a big sigh of relief. So it was a roller coaster of about 12 hours there or so, but now we can look forward to, you know, the next part of the planning of the Canadian men's program.
So I'm coming at this as very much a casual soccer fan, particularly when it comes to the off-the-pitch machinations of what goes on. He's under contract in Canada. Like, how does it even get to New Zealand talking to him? I can understand New Zealand having an interest, but he's under contract. So, I mean, what role would Soccer Canada have in this? Is there no such thing as tampering within FIFA or anything? Like, how did it even get to the point where New Zealand thought that he was coming there to coach?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And soccer in general, which makes soccer very interesting and for a lot of North American fans confusing, is that money kind of dictates everything. And money can break contracts and therefore replace trades. How, you know, in the NHL, we're used to body for body, right? With in soccer, it's money changes everything. So usually there's some behind the scenes compensation or conversations about how that would go to break such contracts. And then oftentimes, too, you know, the player or the coach in this situation can ultimately have the power if he truly did want that position and truly did want to take up that offer, whether it was New Zealand or whether it was maybe from a Premier League club or an English Championship side that have certainly been knocking on doors as well. I know for certain English Championship clubs had looked to interview him before the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. So it's not that foreign in the soccer world, but this is a situation where a lot of people would have been surprised for that job in particular if he had, in fact, left Canada for that job.
I'm also a big fan of the smell test, and the smell test in this would tell me that he likely wanted to go. New Zealand wanted him, but New Zealand wasn't willing to pay what Soccer Canada wanted to let him go. That's what I take out of this, the way it all finally settled out. That's how I feel it went down. Total speculation on my part.
Yeah. It's one of those things, right? This is the beauty of being our side of the business. Right? Yeah. We know a little bit, but you never really know. But it leads to some great conversations. And I do think that, you know, for an organization like that, and Canada Soccer would be in this situation, had been in this situation in the past, there is a bit of a premium that you do have to pay. There is a bit of a extra that you have to compensate to sort out, you know, what you want. And I do think that in this case, money wouldn't have been enough. I really think that you know, John Herdman is fully committed to what he's building here, truly enjoys it. I know that, and he's been on record several times and saying how much his family does love being in Canada. And, you know, I talk about the club situation, which is something that he's spoken about wanting to one day coach club football. But it's got to be the right situation because it's so short-term and fickle in club soccer. And if it wasn't a situation where, you know, he truly felt he could make as big an impact or stay a long time, he wouldn't do it. And then also hosting a World Cup is very different. He's had this experience with the women's team when Canada hosted the Women's World Cup in 2015. And it's a different degree with the Men's World Cup. And it's also a different time for soccer in this country and for soccer as a sport. So I truly believe that's something he really, really wants to be a part of. Is there something else that could, you know, lure him or turn his head? I mean, for all of us, there's something. But money wouldn't have been the only situation. I think there would have been a lot more to it. And to me, New Zealand didn't tick those boxes.
So here's how it is, Brennan, for my smell test. Like I,
and I love again, it. Go.
Part speculation, but part just, you know, sometimes you get information, right? And you're putting two and two together, and sometimes you're coming up with four, and sometimes it doesn't add up, right? But from my perspective, I kind of sense that maybe this was a bit of a leverage play from John Herdman, whether it was to get a better contract or I just wonder, right? There's still that cloud hanging over Canada Soccer's head when it comes to no deal with the players, whether it's men or women. You know, we were all waiting for something to happen before the World Cup. Nothing's happened yet. And to me, until that's fully resolved, I wonder if that played a part, whether it was new contract, but it feels like it was maybe a bit of a leverage play to say, look, there is interest elsewhere. I'd like to stay, but get your crap in order so that I'm fully committed to this thing.
Yeah, that was a quick reaction on Twitter too, both just to the news that potentially he was leaving for New Zealand, and then even after the confirmation, a lot of people thought, you know, this just feels like Canada Soccer, you know, needed a reminder that they have someone that is very coveted, and they have a lot of things to figure out before this World Cup comes. That's something that they know, and there's a lot of changes kind of happening behind the scenes that I think will shake things out over the course of this year and in the lead up to what is hopefully going to be a major tune-up for Canada, the United States, and Mexico is participating in that 2024 Copa America. You know, that really is on the field and off going to be such a massive stepping stone for the three CONCACAF giants, but particularly Canada, who haven't been at that level, to show that they have progressed and that they are a bigger team on the pitch and a bigger federation off of the pitch as well. So there are a lot of things that need to happen, and it's, you know, it wouldn't be beyond the realm of possibility that there was some type of a bumper deal for his current contract that runs through 2026. It's a little bit sweeter than it was a couple of weeks ago, but honestly, Canada Soccer would not be in the situation that it's in right now if John Herdman hadn't, you know, come to Canada when he did to take up the women's job in 2011, and making the move over to the men's side to take the entire program to another level. So I, for one, am very happy to see that he is in fact staying through, at least for now, but has proclaimed he's staying through the 2026.
Did you have any sense at all that there was any kind of serious introspection within the ranks of Herdman's bosses about the performance at the World Cup, or was it was just basically business as usual? Was there ever going to be any kind of like real postmortem in terms of the performance and some of the decisions that were made?
There's always a review process, right? I think to be any type of competent organization, you have to have that regardless of what the expectations were set or the result in the end. And I'm sure that there was some dialogue about, you know, that was larger around what can we do differently. But I do not believe that changing the manager was one of them. I know that that was a suggestion by some on the outside. There was quite a few media conversations about how this proved that, you know, Herdman, with all the tournament experience he had, wasn't he wasn't at this level in terms of the Men's World Cup and was a step behind. And if the program wanted to go farther, maybe they need someone with more Men's World Cup experience. I disagree with that. I think that he's been someone who's shown he's always learned from his adversity and has been able to take himself farther and take the game farther as well, take his team farther, excuse me. So I do think that, you know, Canada Soccer have the right guy. I think that they know that, but I do imagine that there were some conversations about, you know, what are some things to do differently, as I'm sure John has had in his postmortem. You know, he's someone that's very open about talking how hard he is on himself. This is a guy who's always learning. This is not someone that kicks back and, you know, went on a vacation. And I hope that he took some time and enjoyed himself. But he's someone who was right back into the books and studying and learning. He's a constant, you know, learner and self-improver. So I do honestly feel as though he really is committed to 2026 and the next steps. And I think that anyone who spends time around him knows that as well.
Talking soccer with Brendan Dunlop from Canadian Soccer Daily. And yeah, it's interesting because you've got some people that are kind of like, okay, if he leaves, good riddance. But he's done so much for soccer in this country, women's side, certainly on the men's side. And I feel like 2026 is a long ways away. And while you can always do what Morocco did and find somebody 4 months before, you know, the dream name, of course, is Carlo Ancelotti, because he's talked about wanting to manage Canada one day. And the fact that he lives here in the off season and is married to someone from Vancouver. But in the end, you've got 3 years to get there. And to me, I want to see, the beauty is we're going to see, as you mentioned, Copa America in 2024. Now, they still have to qualify for it, but it's a major tournament on par with the Euros. You still have a couple of gold cups as well. You're not going to find somebody like that over the course of the next 3 years. This is a guy who's committed to the program. He's done real good things in getting other people to commit to the program. There's some other dual nationals like Daniel Jebison that you'd love to be a part of it. And I think he's the right guy. And look, if things don't work out over the next 3 years and three major tournaments, you can always make a late change like a Morocco did. But in the meantime, I can't think of a better option for the here and now to lead us through these next few years before we get to 2026. And you can always make the decision, if he's not the guy, you have three more tournaments to judge that between now and then.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the Canada job, and much like the United States job, they're truly unique in comparison to other programs around the world, where there is kind of an infrastructure, whether it's fully successful or not at all times through the year. There's an infrastructure that allows that role to be a bit more interchangeable. And I'm glad you used Morocco as a very good example. We see this a lot with African countries as well, where really the team is sort of set and the manager that ends up pulling the strings of the tournament can be changed at the last second. And as long as he's got the team on board, there's the potential for some real success. And Morocco's success is undeniable. One of the greatest World Cup stories ever, truly. But the jobs that the CONCACAF head coaches have, there's so much more to it, because it's a constant selling job. You're selling players, as you mentioned, to come and be doing nationals. You're selling players who are committed to continue to sacrifice their time and away from their families and commit to this program and these camps, traveling across the world, where, you know, European players just don't have to do that travel sense. So there's a certain type of person and personality that fits the role of a Canadian men's national team head coach and a U.S. men's national team head coach. And these glamour names of Jose Mourinho and Carlo Ancelotti, it sounds great from a purely, football perspective. But could you imagine Carlo Ancelotti doing the camera ops in Edmonton? Could you imagine Carlo Ancelotti going down to El Salvador and trying to convince Alfonso Davies that he needs to play in this Nations League game against Guadeloupe? Like, I just don't think that Carlo wants to do that, you know?
We can still dare to dream, though.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I wrote for CanadianSoccerDaily.com about Zinedine Zidane and how, you know, I don't actually believe it was a true offer, a fully thought-out negotiation process, as the United States program was rumored to be chasing Zinedine Zidane. But worth a phone call, worth the conversation.
Yeah.
And certainly at the time, worth the distraction for U.S. Soccer to have put it out there. But I said the same thing about Zidane, you know, making those trips and, you know, watching all those MLS games. It's just, there's just some men that are suited for roles like that, and these two positions are truly unique in the international soccer space.
A couple more for you, Brendan. On the men's side, and then I've got a women's one for you. Just, I mean, obviously a lot of focus on Alphonso Davies right now at Bayern Munich, Jonathan David at Lille. You've got Alistair Johnston at Celtic. You've got Tejon Buchanan at Bruges. Kyle Larin's made the move to La Liga and scored on the weekend for Valladolid. And of course, Stephane Eustáquieu doing his thing at Porto. Who's the next Canadian that you expect is going to make a move to a big club or a young Canadian to watch right now?
That's a good point. It's amazing that we have several to choose from. You know, it's incredible. It wasn't that long ago where you were talking about some player in a league that you couldn't watch without an illegal internet streaming link, or, you know, show up at some bar that had paid for the overseas subscription to be able to maybe catch them once on a Saturday. You've got every weekend, you've got five or six leagues and guys to pay attention to, which is super exciting. My standout right now is Stephane Eustáquieu. I do think that he's a player that can move from Porto at some point in the next 2 years. I found it very surprising that he took the number 46 shirt when he went there last year. And it seemed as though, you know, he wasn't high on Sergio Conceição's list. And now he is undroppable, which Canadian fans know as he's, you know, one of the first names on the team sheet for John Herdman, when healthy, of course, and has been so at Porto. You look at the way that they sell in Portugal. Benfica has made a very good job of not being just a soccer team and a sporting organization, but a bank, the largest bank in Portugal. Porto are not far behind as being the second largest bank in Portugal, given the economic situation over the last 10 years. I would not be surprised if in the summer you're seeing links for Stephane Eustáquieu to some of the bigger sides in European football. Some of the names that were amongst the Super League clubs, I feel like would be very wise to tap on that door. I think Tejon Buchanan, that's a move that still is looming to happen. Jonathan David's going to be the big move in the summer. How much I think he goes for is still very much up in the air. Lille paid $30 million for him. I love that Ishmael Kone is at Watford right now. I know that was quite a big move, but you know, he went on record referring to it as a stepping stone. And for as offended as a lot of fan bases might be, I think Watford understand they've got a player that has tremendous ambition. And they are a club with ambition as well, and not a club that are in the top six in England. They're looking to get back in the Premier League with him in that midfield. You know, still early days for him. I know he had struggle in his last time out, but I think that's a player with tremendous upside. So it's exciting that there's a few to constantly keep our eye on. Kamal Miller was someone, AJ, that really impressed me. And
yeah,
in Qatar, I know you as well. So there's a player that I wouldn't be surprised giving an opportunity overseas in Europe. And Sam Adekubi is someone we don't talk about enough, who's playing at Hayatspor in Turkey. And there's a player that I think is destined for a bigger club and a bigger league in the very near future. So there's a few for you.
Last one, big year for the women. Women's World Cup this summer. Bev Priestman believes her squad has a 1,000,000% chance of being on the podium in Australia. What do you make of, we're used to the kind of this hubris on the men's side with John Herdman, with his confidence. But what do you make of those comments from the coach of the defending Olympic champs?
They do have the exact same accent, and of course, she learned a lot from John Herdman. So I do love that, you know, Bev Priestman has been able to take some of those pointers and some of those habits we expect from John Herdman and do it in her own way. And I think, you know, this team is very much their own team. And what's exciting is that this team is very different from the team that won gold medal in Tokyo, 18 months ago, 2 years ago, by the time that the World Cup rolls around in Australia. And a lot of people seem to be overlooking Canada. Part of that has to do with the fact that the Olympic tournament, you just have to be the best of eight teams. And the World Cup is much more difficult. For 32 teams, you really are getting all the best teams in the world. You didn't even have the best teams in Europe at the Olympics. So the opposition in front of Canada wasn't as strong as it will be at the World Cup, which is why I think, you know, Vegas and Ladbrokes are very easy to dismiss the gold medalists as plus 2,500, I think, odds to win it all. I do believe that they very much have a chance to be a semifinalist, and I think that is absolutely the goal for this program. But we've seen the gap growing, right, with these European teams who forever neglected and ignored women's soccer and didn't invest in it and treated it like a hobby or a side project, who now are pumping in millions and treating it like the business that football is. And that is only going to make the gap widen and make things more and more difficult for Canada to kind of keep pace. This is truly an important tournament for the Canadian women's program because performance and succeeding at this tournament will solidify what we in the football space know, that more investment and dedication is needed, but also to confirm that it's worth it. And for Canada to keep pace and be one of the leading women's programs, I do think that success on the pitch is within reach in Australia, and I think that they will be semifinalists.
At Brendan_Dunlop on Twitter, and you can get all your Canadian soccer news, men, women, club scene, whatever, at Can Soccer Daily as well. Brendan Dunlop, always appreciate the time. Appreciate you joining us.
Appreciate you, man. Talk anytime.